Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 7, text number 13, which is prose. So have the devotees been just saying the Sanskrit, or... Okay. Itam dritta bhagavad vritta anyagya. How about just the translation? The Sanskrit is pretty scary. Well, is it okay if I just read the English translation? Yeah, okay, because Sanskrit is pretty elaborate. Okay, so this is the translation for 5.7.13. Maharaj Bharat appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair on his head, which was wet from bathing three times daily. He dressed in a deerskin. He worshipped Lord Narayan, whose body was composed of golden effulgence, and who resided within the sun. Maharaj Bharat worshipped Lord Narayan by chanting the hymns given in the Rig Veda, and he recited the following verse as the sun rose, purport. The predominating deity within the sun is Hiranmaya, Lord Narayan. He is worshipped by the Gayatri mantra, Om Bhur Bhava Swa Tat Savatur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dimahi. He is also worshipped by other hymns mentioned in the Rig Veda, for instance, Dhyaya Sada Savit. Within the sun, Lord Narayan is situated, and he has a golden hue. Can I also do the next one? Is that okay? Okay. So this one I'll chant the Sanskrit. This is text 14. Pado Raja Savitir Jatavedo Devasya Bargo Mana Sedam Jajana Suretasada Punar Avishya Chaste Hamsam Gridranam Nrisid Ringiram Ima. The translation for that is, that was the verse that Maharaj Bharat was chanting just as the sun rose. He said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon his devotees. The Lord has created this universe from his own spiritual potency. According to his desire, the Lord entered this universe as the Supersoul, and by virtue of his different potencies, he is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. Purport. The predominating deity of the sun is another expansion of Narayan, who is illuminating the entire universe. So here we get a little further information. It's an expansion of Narayan. The Lord enters the hearts of all living entities as the Supersoul and gives them intelligence and fulfills their material desires. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Savasya Chahamriti Sannivishta. I am sitting in everyone's heart, Bhagavad Gita 15:15. As the Supersoul, the Lord enters the hearts of all living entities. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 5:35, Andantara shta paramanu charantara shtam. He enters the universe and the atom as well. In the Rig Veda, the predominating deity of the sun is worshipped by this mantra, Dhyaya sada savitimandalama javarti narayana sada sijasani sani vishta. That's all Prabhupada gives, but the rest of that mantra is Kayodavan Makarakunda Lavan Kariti Hari Haram Maivapudrit the Sankachakra Gara Pane Dwaraka Nilaya Chuta Govinda Pundarikaksham Rakshamam Sadanangatam. So the translation, Prabhupada gives a rough translation now for that mantra. It says, Narayan sits on his lotus flower within the sun. By reciting this mantra, every living entity should take shelter of Narayan just as the sun rises. According to modern scientists, the material world rests on the sun's effulgence. Due to the sunshine, all planets are rotating and vegetables are growing. We also have information that the moonshine helps vegetables and herbs grow. Actually, Narayan within the sun is maintaining the entire universe. Therefore, Narayan should be worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra or the Rig Mantra. Thus ends the Bhaktivinoda purports of the 5th canto, 7th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Activities of King Bhart. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Buddhalesham Pati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharne Nivashesha Sanivadi Pastajadi Shatarne Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pabunachananda Shri Advaita Gadadar Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Satchitanoy came up to me right at the end of the kirtan and he said, whatever you do, make sure you leave time for questions. So, I want to make sure I do that. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, good. So, we'll continue. So, what? Okay. So, these are two nice verses, and it appears here that Maharaj Bharat is Bharat is appreciating the sun a little bit. Well, he's appreciated in relation to Lord Narayan, and we're hearing how that the Lord Narayan is the predominating deity within the sun is Hiranmaya, Lord Narayan, or who's an expansion of Lord Narayan. That's we hear in the second purport. So, so the sun is pretty spiritual. Lord Narayan is in the sun. And Maharaj Bharat is chanting this mantra. So, just wanted to make the point that it's nice to be able to, and I think he says something here. The Lord has created this universe from his own spiritual potency. It's nice to be able to appreciate how Krishna is everywhere. You know, Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetara. That's from the first canto. That's Narada Muni when he was instructing Vyasadeva. He made that comment that this cosmic manifestation is non-different from Lord Krishna. You know, this is this is Krishna's creation, and so you know it's and in the Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter there are those verses where where Krishna is trying to help Arjuna. Get some understanding of how he can appreciate him everywhere. He goes, Rasoham apsokuntaya prabhasmi sasi surayo panavasarva vedeshu shabdike purusam nushu and punyoganda prativyam cha tejas. You know, how he's explaining how he's the taste in water, he's the sound in ether, he's the original fragrance of the earth, so many different things and ways in which you can appreciate Krishna even within the material world. Here we're hearing about how Lord Narayan is situated within the sun. So it's good to know these things because it can help us be more Krishna conscious. You know, it actually, in a very practical way, it helps us become more Krishna conscious. We're able to see Krishna more everywhere, and that's good. There was one story where devotees were going to the beach or something like that, and they're feeling a little bit guilty. Or Prabhupada was encouraging to go for a swim in the ocean, and they were saying, "But Prabhupada, isn't it? You know, go for a swim in the ocean. I mean, you know, it's just nice down there. It's just the water and there's the sun." And Prabhupada said, "Yeah, go. It's okay, but don't forget Krishna." So he said, "No, these things are in relation to Krishna, and it's okay to appreciate them. We shouldn't try to be artificial and neglect that part of Krishna consciousness. At the same time, you know, we shouldn't." Deviate from our service. And it's not like you should take a few days off to just go and appreciate how Krishna is there in nature. That's not necessary. But just in the course of our ordinary activities, it's good to cultivate, you know, this knowledge and be able to appreciate how Krishna has done such a good job. You know, I mean, I quite often try to do that. Somebody has to be a pretty good cook to prepare something that's better than the taste of like a good mango or, you know, just a good piece of tree-ripened fruit or something like that. And Krishna really knew what he was doing when he created this earth. Because everything is so, it's just, I mean, so many things in nature are so beautiful and they're functional and they So Krishna really did a nice job, and it's good to be able to appreciate that. And it helps in our Krishna consciousness. I'll tell one little thing that happened to me just the other night, actually. I was checking my email, and then I made the mistake of looking at the news, which I stopped doing several months ago, but I did it. And I noticed that, there was something about the 100 meters. The record for the 100 meters run had just been broken in a world record. So I used to be interested in that kind of stuff. So I said, I'll just check this out. So I clicked on that, and I read it, and sure enough, it was. It's this runner from Jamaica broke the record. I mean, just smashed it. And he smashed the guy who was, the second-best runner. And I watched a little video clip about it and showed the race. And, he did it in, a phenomenal time. They're down to, 9.58 seconds for 100 meters. So anyway, but then after I watched it, I was sitting there and I kind of felt bad. I felt guilty. I thought, why did I do that, And my wife immediately looked at me. She didn't see what I was watching, She just looked over and she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "What? No, what's wrong? Why you look so depressed all of a sudden, I said, "I just watched this thing. I probably should, stupid thing." She said, "What?" I said, I watched this little video of this guy winning the 100-meter race, in this competition. And, I like that kind of stuff. I used to be interested in that, She said, "So why are you feeling so good?" I said, "Well, it's not very Krishna conscious, and now I'm going to be, get up thinking about that." She said, "Anyway, just think of it in relation to Krishna." She helped me. She says, "Think of it in relation to Krishna." She said, "Doesn't it say in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm the ability in man." And I said, "Oh, yeah, you're right." But honestly, it's a little bit of a, but I felt better as soon as I thought like this. Oh yeah, that's right. That's true. Krishna's the ability in man. I just was able to see it in a bit more Krishna conscious way there for, and I felt a bit better. I didn't feel quite as guilty. I stopped watching it. But I'm not going to do it again. but Krishna to the rescue. So that's there. So, it actually it's practical, in other words. When you have this, the more, if you cultivate this knowledge of how Krishna is present everywhere, then when you look someplace, you can remember that. That's why Krishna has those verses there in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So when you drink water, you remember Krishna. Oh, Krishna is the pure taste in water. Oh, this is nice water. And rather just getting absorbed, wow, this tastes so good, you think, you remember Krishna. And it helps you in your Krishna consciousness, like that. So that's good. But, as I said, it's good to have that appreciation, but not to a point where it's distracting us from our service, just within the course of our regular activities. So another point is that, we're hearing about Maharaj Bharat here, and Bharat, and how he's performing his devotional service, and doing very nicely. He's experiencing a lot of ecstasy. He's describing how he had a wealth. He was. Does it mention how he's in ecstasy? I thought it mentioned how he was experiencing ecstasy, but it doesn't really say that. But anyway, we get information elsewhere. He's on the platform of ecstatic love. He was on the platform of Baba. But unfortunately, we're going to hear in the next chapter, which is the description of the character of Bharat Maharaj, how he falls down, unfortunately. Of course, it has a happy ending, eventually. But it was, it's unfortunate that he had to go through that. And we should think about, why did that happen? And, everybody knows the story. I think everybody knows the story here. Most of us are devotees for a while. And, he got attached to that deer. He developed a sentimental attachment for this baby deer that was abandoned by the mother when she was running away because she got scared by a tiger. And so he went and rescued it and started taking care of it, and it became very attached to it, and he gave up his devotional activities. And, so much so that then he went to rescue that baby deer at some point, and he'd already stopped by that point. He'd given up his sadhana. And he met with an accident, and he got killed. And dying in that condition, he didn't even though he had, as I mentioned, he had achieved the level of bhava bhakti, but because he was deviated like that, and he didn't die in a particularly Krishna conscious state of frame of mind, he actually took his next birth as a deer. Yam yam bhapi smanam bhavam jajate ante kalevaram, you know, whatever you're absorbed in at the time of death, that's the you know, will determine or influence your next birth. So that's what happened to him. So anyways, we can understand from him that it's we have to be careful. You know, we have to be careful. We can't let our feelings become, you know, overwhelm our intelligence and our discrimination. Feelings are important. It's not like feelings aren't important, and they should be repressed or neglected altogether. I mean, they have their, you know, they're part of being a human being and part of being a spiritual being. Even just feelings, of course, even in the spiritual world. I mean, more better, pure feelings. I mean, so feelings are there. It's part of life. But at least for us here in the material world, we always have to be mindful or be, you know, conscious of the fact that feelings, especially for living entities, you know, like ourselves, well, at least myself, and who are in conditioned life, you know, they're not like an absolute determining factor. That's like a golden rule. We should never, as conditioned souls, we should never allow our feelings to become, you know, the absolute determining factor in what we do and what we don't do. You know, that's a big mistake, and that's what Maharaj Bharat did here. He made that mistake. He allowed his sentiments, his feelings for the deer to become the, you know, the determining factor in what he did, is, you know, whether he was performing a sadhana or not performing a sadhana like that. And as a result, you know, he had to experience, take birth as a deer and then come back as Jed Bharat. You know, he had to, instead of just finishing up as Maharaj Bharat here and going back to Godhead, he had to take two more births. So we have to be careful about that, and especially now in this age, you know, because everybody else is totally not careful about that. Matter of fact, they've made a philosophy out of not being careful about that. Just like, you know, there's that expression, if it feels good, do it. So, you know, what does that mean? If you analyze what are people meaning by when they say that, if it feels good, do it. Basically what they're saying is allow your mind to be the absolute authority, because the mind is, you know, the feeling. If it feels good, do it. Actually, nothing to refer. That's not in agreement with the philosophy that Krishna is presenting in the Bhagavad Gita. If it feels good, do it. See? You know, I mean, Krishna says, what does that mean? What if you're lusty? What if you're angry? What if you're greedy? If it feels good, should you do it? If it feels right that, oh, now I feel like I'm angry at this person. If it feels good, feels right to get angry. So does that mean you should do it? No, not according to Krishna. And at the end of the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says there are three gateways leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. And any sane person should avoid them, and otherwise you're going to hell if you just act upon those things. You know? So, you know, it's not our philosophy. It's totally in opposition to the philosophy that Krishna is presenting in the Bhagavad Gita. If it feels good, do it. If it feels good and it's Krishna conscious, yeah, then you can do it. See? If it feels good and it's not Krishna conscious, we should not do it. And conversely, if it doesn't feel good and it is Krishna conscious, you should do it anyway. You know, you should do it anyway. And if it doesn't feel good and it's not Krishna conscious, well, of course you don't do it. There's nothing to be gained there at all. But I like that. So we always have to be careful about that. And, you know, actually, this is a very important point. I mean, I guess it's a kind of an obvious point, but it is a very important point. And it's actually the dividing line, you know, between being divine and asuric. In the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada, Krishna, of course, first makes the point in this verse. I'll read it. Very quickly. Yeah, the verse is, this is Krishna speaking to Arjuna. He says, O son of Prita, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine and the other demoniac. And then he said, I'll read something from the purport. And then Prabhupada says, one should perform duties in the light of authoritative scripture. This mentality is called divine. Okay? One who does not follow the regulative principles as they are laid down in the scriptures and who acts according to his whims is called demoniac or asuric. There is no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of the scriptures. I'll repeat that sentence. There is no other criterion but obedience to the regulative principles of the scriptures. In other words, what determines whether you're a demon or whether you're, you know, godly, you know, is just simply whether you follow the regulative principles of the scriptures. If you do, then you're considered divine or, you know, deva. And if you don't, then you're a demon or an asura. That's simple. And then Prabhupada goes on. He says, it is mentioned, and Prabhupada does this quite often when he wants, he really makes a point. What he does is he makes the point, and then he kind of goes around, he backs up a bit, goes around, says something else, and then boom, he'll come in and make the point again. And he does exactly that here. Listen to this. This is the next sentence. He says, it is mentioned in the Vedic literature that both the demigods and the demons are born of the Prajapati. The only difference is that one class obeys the Vedic injunctions, and the other does not. So that's it right there. Very important point. As devotees, we should always remember that the dividing line, you know, or the only difference between an asura and a deva is that one follows, you know, the Vedic injunctions or the regulative principles of the scriptures, and the other does not. You see? So, as I said, we always have to be remembering that because, sometimes in the course of devotional service, we don't always feel like maybe doing some particular thing or we do feel like doing something that we're not supposed to be doing. But so we always have to be using our intelligence to, you know, watch this mind, you know, and manage it properly. The reason I'm talking about this is because I had a good realization a couple mornings ago when I was taking a walk, and I was reflecting. I'm going to present this in a positive way now. Okay. I was just reflecting that, you know, I don't feel like a lot of taste when I'm chanting very often, so many. There's different things in the philosophy. Sometimes I'm kind of going like, "Wow, man, that's pretty far out." And I was thinking, "Boy, I mean, am I even a devotee? You know, am I even a devotee? I mean, what's a devotee about me? I mean, I'm not like in ecstasy when I'm chanting. There's different things I'm kind of thinking. Well, that's pretty far out and hard to, you know. I accept it, but it's hard to believe. So what's a devotee about me? But then I remembered this. And I thought, you know, because like human beings are complex, just like computers, they have this thing, they can multitask. So the human psyche functions on many different levels. So, okay, so that was happening on one level of my psyche that, you know, I was reflecting about that. But then I realized, this is the bottom. Then I remember this and I felt good because I remember that, no, the bottom line is, are you following? That's the bottom line. You know, are you following? If you I was the devotee in that particular case, can be experiencing some difficulty of some sort or not experiencing the kind of ideally what he'd like to be experiencing while executing Krishna consciousness. That's unfortunate. That's we want to address that and try to improve things. But the bottom line is, if you're following, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, then you're in good standing. And I thought to myself, well, am I doing that? I said, yeah, well, I felt better then. You know, because performance, we place more importance on execution of activities than feelings. You know, am I feeling ecstasy? Maybe not. You know, and Prabhupada did too. Okay, this is an interesting anecdote, humorous anecdote to that, and it sort of illustrates that point. Prabhupada at one time was trying to encourage Harikesh Prabhu to go to Russia to preach, and he didn't want to do it. He was actually Prabhupada's servant at that point, and he liked that service, and he wanted to stay there and keep being Prabhupada's servant. But Prabhupada wanted him to, and he felt it was more important that he go out and preach. So he was, you know, he was saying to him, "Go, you should go." And then Harikesh raised the objection. He says, "But Prabhupada, it's very difficult to get vegetarian foods there in Russia. You know, I mean, it's." And Prabhupada said, "Then eat meat." And Harikesh said, "But Prabhupada, what about my consciousness?" And Prabhupada said, "To hell with your consciousness." You know, in other words, you know, they had the particular special relationship, Harikesh and Prabhupada. They were always so. But the point being that, you know, Prabhupada was making the point, no, more important than, you know, your, how you feel, you know, your, is, do your service. And if you're doing your service, then, you know, then you're going to be, you're pleasing your guru and you're in good standing. And not if you just, you know, you feel like you're happy in devotional service. That's important too. We want to be, see everybody be happy in devotional service. But Prabhupada was trying to make the point, the more important consideration is that you do what your spiritual master wants you to do and not worry about your own little things. Anyway, that's how to make that point. So, it's very important to just, you know, make sure that we're performing the things we're supposed to be performing. And of course, you know, there's a hierarchy of importance. I mean, it starts with chanting 16 rounds. Chanting 16 rounds means chanting 1,728 Hare Krishna mantras, which means chanting, probably everybody knew that, right? That chanting 16 rounds means chanting 1,728 Hare Krishna mantras. But does anybody know how many Hare's that means chanting? Does anybody know? How many names of God are you chanting? How many names are you chanting if you chant 1,728 mantras? Anybody know? Well, does anybody know the number? I'll tell you, just so you know. 27,648 names. Now, how many Hare's is that? I'll just tell you. When you chant the 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna mantra, you're chanting 13,824 Hare's, 6,912 Krishnas, and 6,912 Ramas. Just point of Krishna conscious trivia there. But anyway, so it's very important. Let's see how we're doing for time there. Not very good. I had a bunch of things more I wanted to say. But I'll say them super quick, okay? So I don't get in trouble here. You know, we should do our service whether we feel like it or not. And just depend on Krishna. Krishna will help. Krishna, you know, Krishna always reciprocates. Just do it. Nike, you know. Just do it. And we have the proper understanding of that. And Krishna will help. Krishna always comes to the devotee's rescue, especially if you're chanting your 16 rounds and you're following the four regular principles. And, you know, Krishna is going to make it happen so that, you know, things work out successfully, both in terms of the results in your activity and in terms of your internal experience. That's my experience anyway. So many days I'm going out on Sankirtan and I'm concerned, well, you know, what's this result going to, am I going to be able to do anything today, or am I feel horrible? But I just do it anyway, and it all works out. Krishna always, it all works out. You know, like, I mean, every day is practically an example of that for me. Yesterday was an example of that. I didn't know where I was going. I went to this place. I didn't know if it was going to be any good or not. I wasn't feeling particularly good. But I just got out and started doing it, and it all worked out. And that's my experience for the last 36 years. So, you know, we just do it and depend on Krishna, and it all works out. And I'll stop there because I don't have more time. I have a bunch more things that I could have said, but anyway, Archdeepu, yeah.
Thank you very much for giving a nice class, Prabhu. You took this assignment at the last moment, as I said this morning. Mukundadat was supposed to give the class, but he backed out at the last moment. I have a question. You mentioned in your discussion that there were some philosophical points that you were having difficulty with accepting. If you want to share that with us, otherwise you can tell me privately, but I was just wondering, I mean, after 36 years, which part of the philosophy are you having difficulty with?
No, I mean, it's just like sometimes I might just reflect upon something and just kind of like, you know, think about, wow, that's really I mean, like, for instance, Prabhupada on different occasions said that the moon is further away than the sun. I mean, just to throw something out there, you know. I don't worry about these things for the most part. I just, you know, I don't even think about them. But, you know, that's just off the top of my head, you know. Because it just sort of flies so much in the face of, you know, all the kind of information you get from modern science. And I don't worry about it. I just put them, you know, but every now and then I'll kind of come across something and I'll just go, you know, because, you know, it's just like different people wear different hats. Well, I mean, I do the same thing. I just wear different, like, sometimes I'm thinking in terms of, like, an ordinary person, and I'll just go, whoa, that's far out. I mean, this is the religion I'm part of, and I'm believing this, you know. So, but, you know, I mean, as I said, it's like, it's on one level, but another level is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, yeah, I accept everything. It's, you know, I accept the authority of the Vedic literatures, and I accept the authority of, you know, Srila Prabhupada and everything that's coming down in Prabhupada's succession. But, you know, as I said, every now and then my mind will just kind of like, going to go, ooh, you know, balk at something. And then I have to call for the intelligence. Okay, intelligence, come on to the rescue, you know, and just kind of, you know, preach to myself and put it all back in perspective. But, I mean, that was a little example I gave. I mean, I, you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of others. But, and sometimes if you don't use your intelligence, you can become a little bit more, you know, disturbed by something. You have to, you know, you have to bring in the intelligence to you know, sort the mind out. But I don't know if that satisfies you or not, but that's, yeah, good.
Well, one thing I would say is this. We keep comparing the Vedic cosmology and cosmography to what the modern scientists are saying, which has been going on now for hundreds of years, so it's not really so modern anymore. So on the one hand, we remind ourselves that they're always changing their viewpoint.
Yeah.
Sariputta Prabhu said in San Diego once, and I always remember he gave a class, he said, the scientists like to say, we used to think such and such, but now we know. He said, no, it's just the opposite. They used to know, and now they think. Because whenever they present it to you, they always present it like it's fact. This is fact. This is what we know. We know this. But later on, they'll say, no, we used to think like that, but now we know better. But no, they always think they know. So their picture is always changing. The Vedic cosmography is constant. It's constant. When we look at the world around us, we see that there's so many amazing things that they have not explained and that they can't explain and they can't do. For instance, what micro fraction of a gram is the weight of a mosquito? And look what it can do. Look what it can do. How difficult would it be to go into a factory, a laboratory somewhere, and create a little creature like that? But they can't do it. Yet they have all these grandiose explanations about the universe and this and that. You know, explain what's right in front of you. Create what's right in front of you. You like to take credit for creating shuttles and this and that? Create this. So we have to constantly remind ourselves that they're on a very shaky platform.
Yeah.
They're on a very shaky platform. Their presentation is a very, very shaky presentation. And when we remember that, then it becomes less difficult to accept some of the more far-out statements that are there in the Vedas. One of which happened right here in New York, where one devotee went to Prabhupada and he had the doubt about, you know, Maharaj Ugrasen having, you know, 43 quadrillion bodyguards. And Prabhupada said, no, that's what it states. And he said, well, facetiously, well, where did they all pass to? And because he made that facetious statement to Prabhupada, later on he fell down. Very shortly thereafter he fell down.
Right.
So, because Prabhupada's point was, you have to accept what's there. You don't have any proof otherwise. And the so-called modern scientists, so-called scientists, they're on a very shaky platform. We can all see that. So what are you going to do? If you accept the person that the knowledge is coming down through, which in this case is Srila Prabhupada, and do any of us have any doubts that Prabhupada was a bona fide, pure devotee of Krishna? Once you accept that, then you accept all the statements that come through him, and then you don't have any problems.
Thank you. That was a fabulous comment. Thank you very much. Really appreciate that. Nam Kirtampu.
Thank you for the class. Nice class. I was wondering, when you were talking about people being asuras and suras, you know, to the degree that we follow the Vedic knowledge, mm-hmm. to the degree that we're asura. So if we're not following that to a certain degree, does that make us somewhere in between?
Yeah, I guess it's not black and white. Because I mean, just like everything else, not black and white.
Who can follow everything?
Well, yeah, so you could present it as that type of a statement, that to the degree that you're following the Vedic injunctions and the rules and regulations laid down by the scriptures, to that degree you are, deva or devotee, and to the degree that you're not, to that degree you're, behaving like an asura or a demoniac person. I suppose you could formulate it into that type of a statement if you want to do it like that. Is that what you were getting at? Yeah, I think that'd be acceptable to do that. Chandrasekhar Prabhu.
Regarding the I am the ability in man verse, we can justify watching a lot of pro football and World Cup soccer and NBA finals with that.
Oh yeah.
Now, what if that verse actually is the truth and we accept it as such, then what's wrong then with watching sports on TV with that verse in mind?
It's kind of like a cheating program. I mean, as I said, I let myself get away with it that once, but I mean, I already made the mistake, and I was just trying to make the point that my wife helped me. I felt better when I heard that verse and I was able to relate it at least to Krishna in some way. But I mean, the idea is you know your motivation. You shouldn't watch something with a motivation to gratify your senses and then use the philosophy to justify your sense gratification. That's, cheating. So, I mean, that would be my response to that. Sachin Noipuru?
Yeah, most of the time we hear that Srila Prabhupada quotes most of the time that the presiding deity of the sun is Vivaswami. But in this particular time...
He refers to him as like the president of the sun planet. I kind of get the impression. I've thought about this a lot.
This particular time is just right.
I'll tell you my understanding, and somebody could correct me. I think there's two personalities. I don't think Vivaswan is Surya Narayan. I think there's Vivaswan, and I think there's Surya Narayan. And I think that it's just some separate thing. Vivaswan is like the president, of the people that are there. And Surya Narayan, I don't know if they actually see him or exactly. He could be there in some transcendental way that even they're not aware of or conscious of. But it's two separate personalities. That much I'm pretty confident about from everything I've studied and read. That's your understanding, too, Archie. Do you have a question about that?
No, that's just...
Two separate personalities, from what I can understand.
All, both in one planet, and one the president, and the other one the governor.
Just like Bhumi is the predominating deity for Earth planet, so we're here, we don't see her. I mean, at least I don't, but she's here, because we know that, because the scriptures say it. So, in the same sense, Surya Narayan is within the sun planet, and he's actually the reason why it's there and it exists, but... It's a planet. It's a whole bunch of stuff is going on there, and they might not even be aware that Surya Narayan is. They might have to read it in the Bhagavatam to find out about it as well. For all I know, some planet is a planet within the material world. So, and this is a transcendental thing that's being presented here. That Surya Narayan, the supreme, is a completely transcendental supreme personality of God. It is situated within that planet. They might not even be aware of it. For all I know, we can't take that for granted. Is what I'm saying. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so it looks like we've got to end there. Thank you very much. Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.